KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Summer Concert in Dawson Park, featuring a live performance by Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. The mission of Summer Concerts in the Park is to bring cultural diversity to metropolitan area residents. Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band play a full range of popular and traditional salsa, son cubano, timba, and tropical styles as cumbia, merengue, y bachata. Again, that's the Summer Concert in Dawson Park with Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. Dawson Park is located at North Stanton and North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information about ticket prices and directions can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
DMA Roberts Station Studio. You're listening to music by a guitarist whose work is shown on freemusicarchive.com as well as on his own site, gillicuddy.com. His name is Gillicuddy, GILLICUDDY.com. Veteran actress Jacqueline Maddox has been featured in some incredible roles recently in Portland, and from a weary, valiant teacher in Sumac's A Noble Failure to the impassioned mother talking her daughter out of suicide in Night Mother, her roles have been full of drama and complexity in Portland theater. But almost 2 months ago, it was about 2 months ago, she began posting some really fun Facebook posts about her growth from the start of her career as a young actress to establishing herself on New York stages and also Portland stages. She was writing to meet a 5-day performing artist acting challenge on her Facebook page. And I enjoyed reading her posts so much that I asked her to perform them live here today on stage and studio. Yes, today. So with me right now is actress Jacqueline Maddox herself. Welcome to Stage and Studio.
Hi, thank you, DMA.
It's great to have you here.
It's great to be
and
here.
You're a first-timer here, too.
I am.
This is awesome.
I am.
So, Jacqueline, why on earth did you take up this 5-day writing challenge to talk about your entire career in 5 days?
I have no idea. It was Gavin Hoffman who suggested that I do it.
He's the director of Night Mother,
He's the director of Night Mother and a wonderful actor also. And so I thought, well, this will be challenging. I've never really thought about my journey.
We often don't. It's like it just happens, right?
Yeah.
It takes a long time, but it happens. So what did you learn from writing for these 5 days?
I learned that I had many more experiences than I'd ever thought I had, and that some of them were quite daunting. And at the time, of course, I sort of took them into my stride, but I was surprised. And so what I wrote, I also realized there was a lot more, but I didn't, you know, there has to come.
Oh, I don't see how you could do that in 5 short posts on Facebook. So so it must have been a challenge, right?
It was a challenge. I also say that I am slowly turning back to my writing. I'm also a playwright. So it helped me to get back into that. And I realized, oh, I love this. I just love
so this actually writing. Ended up inspiring you to do more writing. Well, let's start with the very first one.
Okay.
And this is, if you want to just launch into it, I'll introduce you. This is actress Jacqueline Maddox on her 5-day performing artist challenge. This is day one.
My acting career got off to a rocky and highly questionable start when I was cast as Santa Claus in the kindergarten Christmas show at my grade school. I had one line. Where are my customers? The word customer seems so odd to me, And even though my teacher told me the meaning, I could not refrain from repeating the word over and over again. I can say that these days I try very hard to stick to the script, even though I might have a customer problem in my head. Then came high school and being cast in the Latin Club's year-end production. I was a water nymph named Oenone. No sooner did I step on stage than I wet my pants. I had discovered stage fright. My brain skipped over customer and went right to, well, you are a water nymph and you were probably just frolicking in the lake, right? As they say, use it. Then I was sent to an all-girls school. I've always wondered if there was any connection between the incident with Oenone and the decision to change my school. There, I was cast in all the male roles. Thank you very much. I would audition for the female lead or anything female, and I always ended up playing the drunken goat herd or the lecherous minister, and once Argon in The Imaginary Invalid. The lead, but an old hypochondriac man. I look back on these roles and think maybe they were good training because much later when I played Portia in The Merchant of Venice, I believe all my male characters were there supporting me during the court scene. At graduation, the teacher who cast me as drunken goat herds and so forth shoved a Stanislavski book into my hands and said, I don't approve of this, but I suppose you'll need it sometime.
We just heard actress Jacqueline Maddox reading day one of her 5-day performing artist challenge, and you can read more about my guest at stageandstudio.org. And we're featuring music by Gillicuddy at Gillicuddy, GILLICUDDY.com at the Free Music Archive. Now, what ages were you during this time?
Well, all the way from 4 or 5 up through high school.
So you really started early
like
17. With that.
Yeah. I always had a dream of being an actress.
Really? Since the age of 4?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
So, you know, at what point, you know, these experiences that you write about, towards the end there, it really cemented your drive to be an actor even more so. You wanted to, but did you really decide to be an actor?
I think I really decided in my senior year of high school. Because I remember telling the headmistress, I'm going to go to New York someday.
And what did she say?
And she said, good, yes, certainly, go ahead.
Was it normal, I guess, or just, you know, it still seems, you know, very daring for a young person, even at that time, just to go to New York and pursue their dreams.
Yeah, it was daring, and it was really scary, actually. I get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, you write a lot about that time period.
Mm-hmm. But I was always sort of a rebel, and it suited my personality.
And you had a lot of adventures. So let's hear about it. This is day 2 of your 5-day writing challenge.
To continue this rake's progress, I do believe I qualify as a rake in as much as I have played debauched goat herds. I got my first professional work at a small theater in Rochester, New York, playing all kinds of roles, and then realized that instinct would only get me so far. I needed some training. So I plopped myself down in New York City, not knowing anyone, but with a scheme to find the best teachers and study. New York was overwhelming at first. I made it smaller by getting a street dog I named Alice. Dogs lend new perspectives. And you meet people, but you never know their names. You refer to them by their dog's name. Oh, hi there, Smokey. Or, hey, Spot, how's it going? Things began to feel more comfortable. My first job was being the secretary to a social secretary, which meant that from 9 to 1 every day, I sat facing a wall addressing invitations to debutante parties and charity balls. I was not to speak to any of the ladies who came to talk with the social secretary, just address envelopes. The social secretary liked my writing. At this point, I was in acting class with William Esper, twice a week for 2 years, learning Meisner technique from one of the masters. I was learning to live truthfully under imaginary circumstances, that you can't do anything unless your partner makes you do it, opening up to emotional preparation and independent activities that had to be the most important thing in the universe, and much more. Continuing to address envelopes, I branched out, took singing lessons, and found out I could sing. I'm not saying I'm a singer, I'm not, but I could sing if I had to. By this time, I'd left the envelope addressing business and become a butt fusion expert, which is not what you're thinking. I'll get to that later. So, acting and dancing and singing, so how about dance? I am certainly not a dancer, but I found out I can move around, and that's something, right? So there I am, a butt fusion expert, and I get an audition at the Public Theater. This was during Joseph Papp's fabulous reign, to be an understudy in a Miguel Pinheiro play. I get the job and march into my boss's office and announce loudly that I am ending my butt fusion career. I began to get ready for my first acting job in New York. And what happens? They decide to use only the Hispanic understudy to cover both the white woman and the Hispanic woman. Suddenly, I'm out of an acting job and I have to beg my boss to let me continue as the butt fusion expert. There is comfort in training, so I continued my quest. I found Robert Neff Williams, a voice, speech, and text teacher who taught at Juilliard in Columbia, and I enrolled in his private class. I spent 5 years with him, and it was revelatory. He recently died, and there will never be another teacher like him. He cracked the code for me in Shakespeare, Greek tragedy, Restoration comedy, and I am eternally grateful. I like to think that every time I go on stage, Robert is with me. At home, Alice and I kept walking. Then the public calls again, and guess what? It's another understudy job to cover the two female leads in a new play, and I have to sing. But now I'll tell you what a butt fusion expert does, because I know you're dying to know. I was in charge of sending various sized machines around the country that fuse plastic pipe from 3/4 inch to 48 inches in diameter. I had to keep track of where these machines were, how long they were being used, and where they were going next. When I went on unemployment, I was sent to the office for construction workers, and every week I had to check in, and don't you think they had fun with my job title? Someone would always yell, "Nope, no butt fusion jobs this week."
You're listening to Stage and Studio, and I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're featuring actress Jacqueline Maddox, and she's reading a series of essays she wrote about her acting career as part of her 5-day performing artist challenge, and it was a real acting challenge too, and we're doing it live here on Stage and Studio. You can read more about my guest and hear a podcast of the show at stageandstudio.org. And we've been featuring music from Gillicuddy at gillicuddy.com. Now, Jacqueline, at this point in your career, you are really starting to get real work. I mean, this is, yeah, real work.
It is very exciting.
But you're still struggling. You're still struggling to establish yourself as an actor. I mean, how many times did you think about giving up?
Not often.
Yeah?
I think oftentimes that it was the training that sort of, because I realized how much more I had to learn. And really starting with studying with Robert Williams was an amazing opportunity. So I just hung in there. I mean, there were moments it was terribly difficult and sad sometimes. But I remember walking across town from my apartment once over to the Public Theater and thinking, well, so this is it. This one's so hard.
That must have been a good feeling there. Well, let's go to the third piece.
Okay.
This is, again, are you ready for it?
Yeah.
You're doing really well.
Okay.
Live performance here. And you wrote this for day 3 of your performing artist challenge.
The understudy job at the Public Theater turned out to be a big old educational slap, a large dose of reality, harrowing, setting off the existential terrors and putting me in touch with my mortality. What other job has all that to offer? Maybe an animal trainer at the moment all the lions and elephants decide to go rogue. So there I am, doing my job, learning my lines, attending rehearsals. The show opens, and the critics love one of the actresses I'm understudying. A couple of days after opening, although I forget the exact timing on this, probably due to trauma, I get a call one morning telling me the actress who had just received the wonderful reviews is having terrible back problems, so I'm on and I need to come in for a rehearsal. Okay, fine. What? I go for my one rehearsal, and the cast and stage manager guide me through the blocking. Very different viewing something from the outside and actually being up there on stage. Kind of a kinesthetic earthquake. The set was a cutaway Victorian house. Showtime comes, and I am on the second floor in bed. The audience enters. My thoughts. What are you doing? Why would anyone put themselves through this? I have never been so terrified, and it's my own fault. Is it too late to become a veterinarian? You're no good in math, so forget that. Okay, a dog walker. I know how to do that. Ask Alice. All right. No way out of this, so just try to relax. Go over things in your mind. It's kind of dark up here. Soothing. Okay, it's going to be all right. However, this situation had all the makings of another Oinoni moment. The announcement comes that I will be going on for the actress, and someone in the audience says loudly, "Oh, no!" But I did my job, and most importantly, I lived. I sang my one song, and nothing went wrong. Afterwards, I thought that was that. But no, the fates would have it that I do it all over again. Enough times that finally it was like putting on a soft old t-shirt. I begged casting to come see me, but they said, oh, they knew I could do that role. What about that other role, the crazy girl? Eventually, the actress came back into the show. Things settled down. Then I got the second call. I'm to step in for the other role, the crazy girl. This was not nearly as frightening. I knew what to expect, but it never quite became an old t-shirt. Casting did come see me do it, and after the run, I went on to other jobs, never understudying again. Can't say I miss it, but it taught me a lot about being present, trusting myself, and realizing I didn't really want to be a veterinarian after all.
You know, it reminds me, I was an understudy several times, but one time I actually had to go on stage, and I remember it felt like you were entering this dream. Mm-hmm. when you've been watching this show to study it, and then you go on.
Yeah.
You feel like you just entered this whole other reality.
Oh, it's very odd. It's very odd. A dream is exactly right. That's what
it's like. What am I doing? I should wake up at this point.
And then at the end, it was like, oops, oh my gosh, I did it. Okay. I'm still alive.
Well, and that's it. You survive it, right? Because that is the challenge. And so what you write about is very upbeat. And that's what I liked when I first read. You know, I know that there's pain involved, you know, to every craft, to every, you know, artistry, artistic discipline. But, you know, keeping that sense of humor probably kept you going.
Yeah. I like to laugh.
So that helped you with your, you know, to keep an optimistic viewpoint.
Now, yes.
You were able to find one job after another then. And they were not necessarily the job that you wanted, right, to keep going. But do you think that's possible nowadays for young actors to just sort of do what you did?
No, I think it's terribly difficult. Yeah. As I talk about later, I taught at the North Carolina School of the Arts for 6 years. And those kids come out of that school ready to hit the pavement. But now you have to have a manager, you have to have an agent. It's terribly difficult, and it's very much about where you go to school and what your network is. You couldn't do what I did, which was just to fling myself into it.
It was just an experiment
and
an
adventure. And it was much less expensive.
Right.
You know,
right.
You could afford to be there.
Wow. So that really puts into perspective looking back on this. Now, we're going to be moving into a period of your career now when you're really establishing yourself. So let's hear day four of Jacqueline Maddox's Performing Artist Challenge.
Being in New York in the 70s was magnificent. As a newbie actor, it was possible then to pay your rent, take classes, maybe even go out to dinner, all on some part-time job pay or unemployment in between acting jobs. And you could live in Manhattan, which I did in the West Village. Impossible now. And Off-Off-Broadway was still going strong from the 60s. Space was cheap and ideas abounded. It was the perfect training ground. You could go from show to show learning your craft. Not every play or experience was good, but there was always passion to create, collaborate, and learn more. My scheme at this point was to keep taking classes with Robert Williams, my voice and text teacher, while I put into practice everything I was learning. Sometimes I did plays that made no sense at all, in order to practice finding actions, meanings, objectives, relationships, and so forth. Of course, my urge to ask about the meaning of customer from my beginnings as Santa came right back, but by this time I'd learned to shut up. I got to play Marilyn Monroe making love to a grandfather clock. It's not on my resume, but it was supremely useful, even if my friends all thought I'd lost my mind. In another show, the ASPCA arrived as there were rumors that a rabid cat was loose in the theater. So lots of noise and whispering as the ASPCA made their way over and under seats with a cage. I learned more about concentration and staying present. They caught the cat, but I can't speak to its being rabid. Once, while dancing with a nervous actor, I felt something go into my hair and discovered it was his gum. He'd gone on stage with gum in his mouth and didn't know what to do with it. This was more learning in being present and trying to dredge up some empathy. Sometime in the 70s, I auditioned for and became a member of Ensemble Studio Theater, or EST, a playwright's theater still alive and well today. Hand to God, which grew out of their development process, is now on Broadway and was nominated for several Tony Awards. EST had and still has a fantastic playwright and actor membership and is still situated on West 52nd Street and 11th Avenue. During my time and now, it was an incredible beehive of new works. As a playwright, your work was developed, and as an actor, you got to grow and flourish. Access to agents and casting directors was easier, and you could get them to come see your work. Relationships were established and work grew out of these relationships, whether through an agent or some other actor helping you. Another beehive was the public theater. There were usually four big productions going on at once, and newbie actors like me got chances such as getting to do a new play written by a poet that Joe wanted to see on its feet to help him decide if he wanted to take it to the next level. In New York, you could go walking and always see someone who was the character you were working on, or something that could trip an answer to a question about text. The city was a wonderful teacher and made me realize that my real job was to keep growing, always to be a student.
And that was day four of actress Jacqueline Maddox's 5-day performing artist challenge, and it's a series of essays that I first read on Facebook and asked her to read live today here on Stage and Studio. What kind of turning point are you experiencing in this in your career at this point?
It's becoming more confident, realizing that it wasn't something that was far off in the distance and hard to grasp. Certainly no one in my family had an acting background. So I was coming at it from a very foreign place. So beginning to feel that I belonged, that I could call myself an actress.
That's a very big moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, when you actually believe it, right?
Yes, very big.
and you're really coming into your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear that in the writing, you know, as you're describing that. I don't know if you're ready to bring it all on home, or how does it feel even reading this out loud?
Great.
Yeah?
Yeah? Yeah, it just brings it back. It's so vivid in my mind those days. So, and I know that the memory softens things,
right,
but
it
was an amazing experience to have.
It sounds like it.
I'm so glad I had it, because you can't do it anymore, as I said before.
Yeah. Well, let's hear the last one, because this is the biggest one that you wrote. So here's day five, Jacqueline Maddox's final entry of her 5-day performing artist challenge.
The end of the 70s brought me another job at The Public, Tina Howe's The Art of Dining, a play that included a fully working kitchen and food to be eaten. I was on stage when a fire broke out in the crepe pan at the end of the play. The curtain came down and someone was hurt. I was lucky. 4 days later, we reopened with an understudy and then went on to Kennedy Center. I'll never forget rehearsing the end scene when lights had replaced fire and the fear that went through all of us. I had a new street dog by this time, Belle Starr, who rushed at Joe Papp. He complimented me on my fine dog training. All my dogs have been to the Jacqueline Maddox School of Dog Training, which means they can sit, sometimes lie down, and occasionally come when you call them. They have all been very patient with me learning lines, except for my poodles, who want all the attention and always leave the room. Back in New York, my neighbor almost called the cops when I was running through some Greek tragedy. It was nice to know I was effective. I was coming and going now, doing some regional work. In New York, I did a play called Why War with Vietnam vets. All the dialogue was taken from personal letters written during the various conflicts this nation has had. It was a challenge, and I loved anything that could make me stretch. I taught voice and speech at the neighborhood playhouse while I continued to act. Later, I taught at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. There, I felt like I was the lucky one going back to school. The dean was Gerald Friedman, a grandmaster of the theater who had directed on and off Broadway for years and was a brilliant educator. I began to understand more clearly the difference between acting and being. That is, really living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. My students were committed, passionate, curious, supportive of each other, and eager to learn, and they taught me. My husband, Arthur, sold a lot of art there, and I wrote, mostly during vacations, as the school year was intense. Eventually, I got two plays produced. My first year at the School of the Arts, I would fly up to New York to study with Patsy Rodenberg, the National Theater's voice and text coach, to increase my knowledge about vocal training and selfishly to touch base with Shakespeare and a chance to act. During my second year, I began flying up to Philadelphia to learn to teach Alexander technique. For 3 years, I went regularly to Philly, learning how to teach performers the flexibility that comes with ease and the appropriate amount of tension. Gerald Friedman began to take lessons from me each time I returned. He grew to believe that Alexander should be the beginning for all performance technique. After 6 years, I began to miss acting and also wanted to write. Arthur wanted to move west. We moved to California and then to Portland, having visited a niece here and fallen in love with the city. At times, the theater scene reminded me of the best of the 70s in New York, in that there was a wonderful stew brewing, so much activity, and as the director and teacher Harold Klerman said, you have to have that stew in order for the masterpiece to appear. My teachers now were plays like Kiss Me Like You Mean It, the Apple Family plays, and A Bright New Boise with Third Rail Rep. A Noble Failure by Sue Mock. This wonderful play made me aware of our education wars and put me in touch with teachers on the front line. Also, The Tripping Point, One Flea Spare, and Suddenly Last Summer, with the inspired Samantha Vandemerva, and many more like Carb Theater with Gemma Whelan, and Jane Unger, and all the wonderful actors I played with. In 2007, I was a finalist for the Oregon Book Award for my play Strange Sightings in the Great Southwest. And last, I am deeply grateful that I got the chance to play Thelma in Night Mother, a profound acting lesson in simply being. Gavin Hoffman, in his directing debut, took on one of the most difficult contemporary plays. He was wonderful to work with, specific, inquiring, challenging his actors, and always supportive of their efforts. Dana Milliken, as my daughter, was a joy, always present and generous, an excellent lifeline, which is what I think the best acting partners are. I continue to make discoveries and to grow, and that's all I want.
And that was actress Jacqueline Maddox completing all five of her essays she wrote for the 5-Day Performing Artist Challenge. Kudos to you. You did it.
Oh, thank you.
You did it. We featured music by Gillicuddy, G-I-L-L-C-U-D-D-Y, and he's at gillicuddy.com, a guitarist whose work is featured on the freemusicarchive.com as well as on his site, gillicuddy.com. Now, Jacqueline, what, how do you advise in the last minute here the process of looking back on your career if people, other people want to do this and write about it?
Just sit down and write about it. It's really interesting. It makes it very clear where you got to, why you are the way you are with your work. It's a pathway to being present.
Well, what's next for you on this pathway? Any upcoming roles?
I am doing a wonderful Irish play called Chapati with Alan Noss that is being produced by Carb Theatre. Gemma Whelan will be the director. And that will be February, March of 2016.
So that's something to look forward to.
Very excited about it.
Early 2016. Yeah. Definitely, we'll have to keep track of that, you know. That's wonderful. Well, I just wanted to say thank you for doing this, Jacqueline Maddox. Thank you for this performance on Stage and Studio today live. And you got through it. You survived it. And we enjoyed it. So thank you.
DNA.
It was great to have
My
you here.
My pleasure.
If you missed any of the show and Jacqueline's essays, visit stationstudio.org, where I have a podcast of the show later this afternoon. And before we go, a couple of announcements. Anonymous Moves presents Shakespeare's Cymbeline in a female driving version of the play through August 8th, and that's at Milagro Theater, located at 525 Southeast Stark in Portland, and more info at anonitmoves.org or 503-686 0294, and come to Never Give Up, a free event of readings about Portland civil rights hero Minoru Yasui. And that's tomorrow night, Wednesday, July 29th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Jade Apano Multicultural Space at 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. And you can find out more at theaterdiaspora.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thank you, fabulous Janet Anderson, our engineer. And visit stageandstudio.org and like me on facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Matt Dishman Community Center annual block party on Saturday, August 8th from noon to 4 p.m. This family-friendly event will include barbecue grub, live music and a DJ, activities for kids, family swim in the pool, local vendors, and more. Again, that's the Matt Dishman Community Center annual block party on Saturday, August 8th from noon to 4 p.m. at Matt Dishman Community Center, 77 Northeast Knott Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Willamette River Revival Sunday, August 2nd from noon to 7 p.m. at Cathedral Park in North Portland. The Willamette River Revival is a community-based river festival to celebrate and reconnect with the lower Willamette River and its cleanup. The Grand Ronde Tribe will host a salmon bake,